pad up. It's the Australian Cricket Podcast, and here are your hosts.
Welcome to the Australian Cricket Therapy Hour, helping Aussies get through this tough time and at the same time spreading joy through the hearts and minds of English listeners. Let me introduce my panelists this week. Firstly, we have ace sports writer for the Australian Associated Press, assistant to the founder of the Australian Cricket Podcast, novelist and journalist. Welcome back, James McSmith. How are you, mate?
Man, it's great to be here, mate.
This is an unprecedented level of attendance at the podcast. Three in a row. You haven't done three in a row since the show started 3 years ago.
Well, mate, you know I'm that upset about the state of Australian cricket that I'm trying to do my bit, mate.
Well, welcome back. And now our special guest this week does absolutely everything. She's the first woman to score 1,000 runs and take 100 wickets in one-day internationals. She represented Australia 184 times across three formats. She's currently a player for the Sixers in the WBBL. She is an IPL, ICC and Channel 10 commentator. I'm going to continue. Earlier this year, she was appointed as an independent board member of the on the Federation of International Cricketers Associations. And somehow, Lisa Stelaeker has made time to come on the Australian Cricket Podcast. Welcome back.
Thanks, Manners. Why wouldn't I be here?
Well, I'm glad you're here because it's a very emotional time for us. You know, we're upset about the state of Australian cricket, so it's great to have someone with such experience here and help us through this tough time.
Well, happy to help. Happy for everyone to sit back in their couches and let's get through this together.
Yeah, now the Pommy listeners are loving this at the moment.
They're reveling
in this.
I do need some of that therapy you've been talking about, Manners.
Now, we've got so much to talk about in this show. We're going to talk about the Rod Marsh resignation, the second test hiding, all the news in the commentary circuit. A lot to get through. But I want to start off with some footage that came out yesterday of Faf du Plessis shining the ball during the second test with the lolly on his tongue as he was shining the balls. Now, I got a lot of stick after the last show when I said that it's not good when players apply foreign substances to the ball and it helps the ball reverse swing. This is clear evidence of Faf cheating, plain and simple. What do you two think of this? Is it just gamesmanship?
Well, it's interesting because as players, I'm sure there have been times that we've all done something, whether it be the sunscreen on our arms or on our faces, zinc. I've heard Vaseline being used to stop sweating with your eyebrows, but then they use it on the ball. So obviously ICC are now looking at the footage and they'll, I'm sure, speak to Faf and then decide on what the code of conduct should be, whether he gets off with a slap on the wrist or whether there's something a bit more serious. But all I can say is the South Africans were able to swing the ball, reverse the ball, a hell of a lot better than the Australians.
Well, that's it, isn't it, Lisa? We're sort of wondering why they're so more adept at that Irish swing, at that reverse swing than we are. And this is the reason why. I mean, I can do is go to Law 42.3 of the MCC's Laws of Cricket that states that a fielder may polish a ball, quote, provided that no artificial substance is used, end quote. So clearly they're in violation of that law.
What I think Faf deserves is a bloody idiot award because it's clear that if the boundaries of the law are sometimes pushed, well, don't like stick your tongue out with a lolly on it and shine the ball at the same time. That was just ridiculous. So I think to all the doubters out there, go on, look at that footage, make your own mind up. I think it's cheating, plain and simple.
But what punishment should he be subjected to?
Rub him out for the Adelaide test.
I agree.
Sit it out. All right, so now let's move on to the second test result. South Africa won by an innings and 80 runs, and it takes their streak in Australia to three series in a row here, which is amazing for a touring side to win three in a row here. Hasn't happened since the West Indies did it back in the 80s. That's how hard it is to win here. And this is the first stat for the English listeners. This is Australia's fifth test loss in a row. Terrible stuff. And the first casualty has come out. Rod Marsh has resigned as chairman of selectors. Trevor Holmes has been installed as interim chairman. And Greg Chappell comes in as a selector. I don't think anyone will be too upset with Rod Marsh's resignation, but I think it's important that we acknowledge that Rod Marsh has worked very long and very hard for Australian cricket. And we should pay tribute to his service. And I think it's time now for a new era.
Well, it certainly isn't. Has to be a new era, given the last five test series. Things haven't gone as well as it would have liked for the Australians. Given that he had also said that in, I think, June, he was going to walk away. It makes sense that if they're going to bring some younger players in, you might as well start with a new chairman as well. He has been a wonderful servant of the game for Australia, and not only from a playing point of view, selectors, but coach as well. So it's going to be a sad time to not have him involved in cricket. You're used to those type of faces around the cricket field, but I'm sure we'll still see him in some capacity later on.
It was definitely a time for change, though. There was a lot of popular opinion was going against him and the whole selection committee. And, you know, his record is kind of patchy when Rod Marsh was chairman of selectors. They won 12 tests, they lost 10, and there was four draws. That's a winning percentage of 46%, which is not a great test record in the period when he's been in charge.
Of course, he's not primarily responsible for that, Matt. And, Menas, I just want to bring up something here. And this obviously goes beyond Marsh's tenure, but Australia have only had five specialist batsmen make test debuts at age 25 or younger during the past 10 years. So that's it. We're just not giving that youth a chance, are we? I mean, that's, and this is the situation that we're now hemmed into, that we're really struggling to bring on the next generation of batsmen.
Well, Greg Chappell's been installed as a selector, and he's been working on the pathways for the young, talented players. So if anyone is going to have an intimate knowledge of the players and the personalities at a young age, then Greg Chappell's probably a good man to be a selector.
Yeah, he's been involved as a national talent manager for a number of years now. Was the instigator behind ensuring that the CA11 took part in the Matador Cup.
I'm still not happy about
I wanted to point that out, Menas.
Yeah. So
he's the muscle one behind that.
And then also the fact that in the national championships, they select a CA11 to take part as well. So his big push is youth. So absolutely, you can expect a few younger players in the next Australian test side. You look back on the history, and there's been very few players that the Australians have selected who have played very few tests. You know, I think Steve Warp had played 11 first-class games before he was selected. Now, you get a gut feel about certain players that they're going to go on to great things, and sometimes they don't need to spend a lot of time in the first-class level to then perform well at international. But at the moment, my real question is, I think there's a problem with Sheffield Shield and where it sits in the psyche of Cricket Australia and how important it is. At the moment, it seems to be a bit of, well, we're going to trial this ball here. We're going to play a day-night here. We'll play with a pink. We'll play with a duke later on. We'll pull Mitch Stark out of the first after the second innings. You know, Shield cricket should be hard-fought cricket. It should be state versus state, not... If you perform well there, then everything else takes care of itself, whereas I think we're starting to think too far ahead of ourselves and worry about the end game instead of, well, hang on, let's see if we can produce some players that can win games at first-class level in difficult situations.
I'm totally on board with all that. I think Shield cricket has been eroded the way they're treating it, and the Matador Cup, the way they've put the CA11 in there. A couple of things about that. There was some article today in Fox Sports about Greg Chappell was one of the people that changed the second 11 competition at Shield level to primarily an under 24 comp, and that has eroded the standard of a pool of players under the Shield cricket. So if you're a 25-year-old grade player who's missed the boat thus far, you feel left out and maybe you walk away from cricket. Is that a sort of fair point?
Yeah, that is a fair point. That's certainly been discussed within so many offices and pubs and your mate's house. I know I'm coaching Mossman Men's Grade Club at the moment. And
my old club.
And
played there as well, man. It was back in the day. I think we played together, didn't we?
Three whalers.
Oh, good work. So the issue is there, you know, is the fact that there isn't that opportunity for the 25-plus. And we're starting to see even grade cricket, your 30-plus cricketers that have got the experience aren't sticking around and helping develop the younger players. So I think the average age in the first grade side at Mossman would be probably about 25, and you've got some really young kids there. But you need your 32-year-old, your 33, 34, passing on that knowledge. And for some reason, maybe it's how we're trying to sell the sport at the moment, and T20 cricket is all fun and exciting, but there's still the longer form is the foundation, is the base.
I think as well the Big Bash hemming in the Shield comp is not helping the rhythm of the players. So I noticed last season a lot of young batsmen started the season really well in the block of five games. Then the Big Bash comes along and obviously they all go away from playing longer form cricket and play T20 cricket. And then they come back to Shield cricket right at the end of the season for another block of games. It makes it hard for the players to get into the rhythm of playing first class cricket.
Yeah, I think it does.
Not that I think you can change it.
No, that's the thing. Like now you look at the scheduling and having to fit everything in and you see how important the Big Bash has been for Cricket Australia and for the players and T20 leagues around the world. So there's a huge scheduling issue trying to fit everything in. And I think if you would ask the players, they'd love to go back to what it used to be like from a Shield point of view. You play a Shield, then you play your one-day game after the Shield against that same opposition, and you go throughout the season to do that, obviously with the Big Bash in there because they all enjoy it and they all want to play it as well.
But Manus, we've obviously touched on this before, and for me, Lisa, across the board, the scheduling from Cricket Australia is a dog's breakfast, because if you look at the international schedule this summer, obviously, and we mentioned it before that we play the T20s against Sri Lanka the day before we play in India, but also halfway through the summer, we head to New Zealand to play games over there. I just think the complete scheduling, and obviously this comes from the top, from James Sutherland, I just think the whole organisation, I just think there's a problem there. There's a miscommunication. I just think across the board, that's why I think there should be change at the top level as well.
Well, hopefully this crisis, as you named it last week.
Every newspaper, every media organisation in the country is saying
a crisis. They picked up your comments. Last week, Lisa, thanks, we debuted in your segment Mad Macca. Macca went off, gave everyone a serve, and it was a bit of a soothsayer. Whoa. Because things fell apart after that. I want to go now to Steve Smith following the second test, because he had a really good press conference. I think we saw a lot of raw emotion for the captain, and I think it takes us inside what's going through his mind and the Australian team. So he was a dejected skipper, but he called for more resilient and more disciplined play. He wants bowlers that instead of bowling five good balls in an over but one bad one to end it, to bowl six balls in a row that are good. He called the performance humiliating and embarrassing. He called for the boys to be tough. And then when Nerali Meadows from Fox Sports asked him, what do you need? He said he wants players with pride in the baggy green. Now, okay, that's what he wants, but what does that say about the players he's got around him? Maybe he's definitely lost faith in the group that's around him.
I watched Inside Cricket last night, and Brad Haddin said, let's not worry about what the scores were and how poor we've performed in the five tests, but for the captain to say that he wants players that have pride in the baggy green, I think that there's an issue there. So I agree with Brad Haddin's comments that he mentioned there. So obviously it's a group that is low on confidence, and whenever you start to lose, the finger pointing tends to happen as well. So I think the group, and I don't know what's going on in that change room, obviously they need to spend a lot of time over this next, when they come in for the Adelaide test, be really open and honest. And we've seen South Africa say their preparation and their team huddles and meetings to kind of go, well, this, as a group without De Villiers and some of the, and Callis and the big names, they're a new group. How are they going to forge forward as a South African side? Well, they said they were really open and honest with each other, and then they were able to move on and then hold everyone accountable. And everyone's kind of gone through that phase. And at the moment, the Australian team is there and they need to quickly address it.
I mean, Lehman made some really interesting comments about the culture, comparing the dressing room to the cast of Con Air, that old movie from the 90s, saying that there are all these different characters thrown together. And
obviously, convicted convicts too. What's he trying to say there?
I'm not sure. I don't think he knows what he's trying to say. But there's certainly worrying signs.
Maybe it was his favourite movie, that's why.
Now, one of the questions asked to Smith in this press conference was, have you got the players you wanted? Now, again, Steve Smith couldn't answer the question because it probably goes against his contract, but he basically said, no, he hasn't. That was the insinuation. And then when he was followed up with, would you like to be a selector? He answered, that's a tough question. I'm not really sure, to be honest with you. So, which sounds to me like, yes, I would, but I can't say that.
Well, he wants more influence over the selection process, doesn't he? Which is fair enough. I mean, like you say, Lisa, the fingers are being pointed at him. His head's on the chopping block.
Well, now let's take it to inside cricket last night. For firstly, Mark Waugh answered these criticisms and said Smith has a big say in the team. Mm-hmm. But whether that's the final say, I think, you know, you can sort of nominate 12 or 13, but if you've got the spinner you don't want or you want a different third quick, it throws your whole plans out the door.
Yeah, maybe this side is different and maybe the selectors go about it differently. But every side that I've been involved in, the captain has a huge say in the team that he or she wants on the field. Because at the end of the day, you're going out there leading this group. You want to have faith in the players that you have out there. And if you are umming and ahhing about this person that's been selected, well, firstly, you're not going to bowl, if it's a bowler, you're not going to bowl them as much as you probably should because you don't have that faith. Or from a batting point of view, you might be hesitant where, you know, when you're out there batting with him or her. So I agree with Mark, and for him to come out as a selector saying, well, you know what, Steve Smith actually has a huge say and they normally get the team that they want.
Well, I don't think Mark's going to say anything else, is he? He's going to defend his own position.
Yeah, he's like, yeah.
But the way Steve Smith has been using Nathan Lyon this season has been puzzling, absolutely puzzling. To me, it looks like Smith lost faith with Lyon after the Sri Lankan tour.
Correct.
Another, Alan Border was talking about this. Now, Alan Border was in a really similar situation as Steve Smith, a struggling team, performing batsman.
Remarkably similar, I think.
Menace. Yeah, and he said that, you know, Smith should insist for the team he wants because his head is on the chopping block. If this team keeps losing, eventually Warner will take over and Smith will be relegated to just being another player. So Smith's got to really step up now and get the players he wants.
But, Menace, I think, like, so you say, okay, let's say he he's not sure about Nathan Lyon. It appears to me as well. Did he really want Joe Mennie to play the last test? And would he have chosen Callum Ferguson in the last test? I just can't imagine that he would have wanted him in his team.
Well, we'll have to get him on the podcast and we can ask him. All right, so let's talk about what changes they might make with a new chairman of selectors. Obviously, Lyon has been drawn in the sand after Hobart test. Rod Marsh is gone. I think anyone in the administration could be next. Pat Howard, James Sutherland, Darren Lehman. If this keeps happening, they're all in the firing line. But let's talk about the players now. Mark Waugh said they'll be looking at the upcoming Shield round very closely, which I think is a huge mistake. Well, you can't cherry pick one round and say, if you score runs here, we'll pick you in the test side. You look at someone's performance over a year or two. Is that seem strange to you, Lisa, that they've just put all this pressure on one game?
Well, it's made us all look at Sheffield Shield a little bit closer than what we have done in the past, hasn't it? Look, I think they'll look at past performances, whether it be last Sheffield Shield, the Australian A series as well. So there were a number of batsmen that performed well up in Queensland. So if anyone does come out, so if any of those players that they've kind of got on their sheet performs well, then certainly
they'll jump the queue.
Correct. I don't think someone outside of those on their kind of want list, if that person scores 100 odd, I don't necessarily think they'll just be elevated and get the opportunity. So they have got an idea of what the next batsman.
They want players in form, don't they?
Well, absolutely. We need players in form. And I like the idea that the fact that they've said to the Australian team, all of the batsmen have to go back and play. Even Nathan Lyon is playing as well. So obviously it doesn't apply to the spinners.
But, man, they also want guys who perform under pressure, don't they? And so if you perform under these circumstances, if you get runs in Shield cricket, you're in the team. You want that sort of player.
Yeah, throwing that pressure on
them. Yeah, yeah. You want that sort of player on the side.
I don't like that. I don't like the idea of throwing, well, hang on, this round of Sheffield Shield, whoever does well, you'll get selected for Australia. So everyone's thinking in the back off or the front of their mind to get runs so that they can have the baggy green. They should be, well, I'm playing for my state. I want to win this game for my state. And if I perform well, then everything else takes care of itself. So again, like I said, I keep coming back to the fact that we're thinking too far ahead, whether it be from an administration point of view, selector's point of view, or even a player's point of view. How about we just win this game of cricket, this session? Yeah, let's break it down and then things will take care of itself.
I mean, Jeff Thompson on the Inside Cricket had a good point about fast bowlers last night. Just let them bowl, and when they get injured, they don't bowl, and you bring someone else in, because all this man management and trying to, you know, treat them like footballers or rugby players, you can't turn on form on and off. You can't be a good bowler one day and then not bowl for a week and come back and do it again. It's just fickle thinking. But, okay, let's start with the batsman. Adam Voges, unfortunately, has to go. He's averaging under 10 in this series. I think if you had a young player in this position, at least you'd have an eye to the future. Okay, they're getting experience for down the track, but probably his time is over.
Also, then I feel the nature of his dismissals in
Hobart.
You see
Smith at the other end in the second innings. They had stump cam of Smith's reaction to Vo just getting out, and it was just shock and disbelief at the shot. So I think he's got to go, and this is a popular misconception that is being put forward in the media that the cupboard is bare and there's no one at first-class cricket performing. That is simply not true. Last year in Shield cricket, we saw a number of batsmen make great strides. I'll give you some examples. Ben Dunk scored 4 centuries. He's a wicket-keeper batsman. He's not talked about, but he'd be an option instead of Neville. You've got Travis Dean, Peter Hanscom, George Bailey, Cameron Bancroft, and Travis Head all scored 3 centuries in the Shield. Then you've got Matty Renshaw and Curtis Patterson with 2 centuries each. The next rung down, you've got Glenn Maxwell, who averages 45 in Shield cricket. So the cupboard is not as bare as people are saying. There is a lot of talent there. It's just identifying the players they're going to give a chance.
It is, but we also heard Mark Waugh saying, well, they don't want guys that are averaging in the low 40s. They want guys averaging 45 plus.
I think that's impossible, though, and it goes back to the Big Bash. Those key months of December, January, hard wickets, great time for scoring runs, are now taken up by the T20 comp. So what you get now is the Shield players, they play at the beginning of the season when the decks have still got a bit of life in them, and they're playing at the end of the season when autumn's coming on and they have a bit of life again. So I think expecting these batsmen to average, you know, over 50 and score 1,000 runs is sort of 10 years ago thinking.
I agree, Maz, but you can't have... I mean, Cameron Bancroft averages 37. Hanscom averages 39. Travis Head averages 33. Is that really sticking your hand up?
Well, I've identified Curtis Patterson as the man.
I like him.
Well, I mean,
have you seen him a lot playing at the Nets and stuff?
I've seen him in Shield and...
What do you think? Because when I've watched him play, this is what I like about him. He's happy to go out there and guts it out for the first 30 or 40 runs and take up 100 balls, like we saw Bavuma do in the second test, get through the tough periods and then cash in as the day goes on. And that sort of attitude seems missing at the moment, and he naturally plays that way.
I think he's an old school cricketer. The way I define it is exactly that, that he spends quality time in the centre. He's not expansive with his range of shots. He can certainly catch it up once he's in, but he's willing to be there and be there for long periods of time. You know, another one that's spoken about a lot is Nick Maddison, but I think he's almost along the lines of similar type of play to what we're seeing in the Australian teams. You know, they're flat track bullies. So he's got exciting attacking shots, and he can rip a bowling attack apart, you know, when he's in form, but he might be too much of a similar type of player to what they're trying to get rid of. Whereas I think you need those tough grinding out type of players. You know, something like Chris Rogers as well.
Maddison averages under 40 as well. But Lisa, would you put Curtis Patterson in for Adelaide? Would you just give him a chance?
I think you've got to change Rogers. I think that's a non-negotiable. I like Patterson. I think also to have a kind of a left-hander in there. You know, we look at Hussey, who did that job really well for the Australian team, Gilchrist, you know.
But Patterson has star written all over him. He made his debut when he was 18, scored 157. He's been playing for 5 years. He's got experience mixed with youth. It seems like a no-brainer.
Yeah, that would be my pick. So I guess we'll see if he scores runs this Sheffield Shield.
There's a quote here from Brad Haddon about him as well. He's as passionate as I've seen any young bloke about getting around that baggy green. So that really answers Smith's question about he wants blokes who want to fight for the baggy green. So, and from what Lisa said, I mean, Patterson is almost has to be there, doesn't he? Got to give him a chance.
So we've put Patterson in. Yep. Next one to go, Nathan Lyon. He's averaging 86.5 runs per dismissal across first class and test cricket this summer. I think Stephen O'Keefe has to be slotted in there. His first class record is amazing. Took 5 wickets in the last Shield game. One thing about O'Keefe is he's stump to stump. He'll tie up an end at the very least.
Yeah, I agree, Manners, about the fact that Nathan Lyon came back from Sri Lanka really down on confidence. He didn't perform as well as he would have liked. The pressure that you get as well being a spinner going over to the subcontinent is you're expected to take lots of wickets. Mm. So you, again, put a bit more pressure on yourself. He wasn't, I think, Steve Smith, you know, bowled Steve O'Keefe before Nathan Lyon. So, you know, those little things actually affect players. Like, I'm normally the frontline spinner and I'm not bowling first. Why, you know, so whether that's what's going on with Nathan, you look at the first test, Mitch Stark put down a chance in the Perth test. That could have changed the confidence and it didn't go Nathan Lyon's way. So things haven't gone well for him. And obviously he hasn't been bowled as much as maybe he would have liked and certainly what the cricket fans thought that he would. So he's down in confidence. But I also think Steve Smith has
to... You like him, don't you?
I do like him.
I can hear it coming out. No. Another offie.
I like Steve O'Keefe as well. But I think from a captaincy point of view, this is where Steve Smith has to learn his lessons of managing groups of players. When players are down in confidence, how do you give them the tools to get them back up? And I don't know if he's done that. But looking at, obviously, his performance over the last two tests, they're not great. So Steve O'Keefe, you know, should or could potentially come into the game, and I think he'll do a great job because he's shown that. Especially in Sri Lanka.
Man, is the key, if you get rid of Nathan Lyon, which is what you want, who sings under the Southern Cross, I stand? Who gets that? That's more important than who's a spinner. Who gets it? That's the most important job in the team.
Lyon gets to nominate the next player that sings the song. And when will they ever get to sing the song again?
Tough ouch.
All right, next one, Joe Burns. Macca, you're going to say gone. I can say you've given the finger up. Because I think Burns should start.
I think he's been treated badly. I don't know who comes in. I'd stick with him.
Lisa, is that a Burns in or out?
I think Burns in.
Yeah, I feel sorry for him. And I think
he
was really unlucky in this test match. That feather in the second innings down the leg.
It was still a poor shot.
Yeah, it was.
That is an unlucky mode of dismissal,
it is unlucky,
isn't it?
Yeah.
But I think Warner and Burns had something last season that's worth persisting with. Now, Usman Khawaja, he for me is a real enigma. Lisa, now I know you probably have seen him around a bit. He comes across to me as Mark Waugh, very casual, very relaxed. Sometimes when he gets out, you think a bit like when Mark Waugh was playing, oh, what sort of shot is he playing? But that seems to be just the way he is and the mannerisms. Do you think he's the number three for Australia? Do you think he's got the ticket to do it?
Yeah, I think he does. I think we need that type of batsman within the side. He's your elegant, classy type player. So there's a fine line with making things look so easy and then making things look like you don't care.
Yeah.
So
does he have the pride though? That
absolutely, I think he does.
I don't think Smith was talking about him, mate.
I think he's a number three. He should be kind of locked up for the whole summer and given the opportunities because he's come in and out of the side. I mean, he travelled to South Africa for the 5 ODIs and didn't get a game. He was the only one that didn't get a game, and we lost 5-0. And I was scratching my head going, why haven't they given him one game at least in Cape Town?
I mean, you take out the two tests in Sri Lanka where he underperformed, and his stats for the last test since he made it back last summer are outstanding. So it'd be a gutsy move to throw him on the trash.
You know, he obviously had that sublime summer last year. And what I'm impressed with, Lisa, is that he's not in that form now again, and he perhaps never again might be in that form. But he's still scoring runs. I think he's worked out his game at test level. I think he'll be around for a long time, hopefully.
Let's hope so. Now, another one. Now, Joe Mennie. Now, Sean Pollock summed up Joe Mennie, I thought. He summed up all of Australian cricket last night on Inside Cricket by saying on Joe Mennie that if Joe Mennie was the leading Shield wicket taker last year, I would be concerned about the standard of batting. Pollock's just ripped the bats
hard out of Australian cricket.
Yeah, I think Mennie. I never was a big fan of bringing Mennie in. I would have stuck with Bird. I think Chad Sayers is a good option. Doug Bollinger is a good option. I think this constant talk about having bowlers that bowl a certain pace is ridiculous. We saw Philander bowling at 125, making our batsmen look like schoolboys, and we obsessed with pace. So I think Mennie's got to go. Get someone else in there.
I'm going to stick up for Mennie just for a second in the fact that he got selected for the South African ODI series, came in when the wickets were absolutely flat. I think his first game was at Wanderers, got smashed, came across a very strong South African side after a very good Australia A series as well. But then coming here as well, he's come up against a team in form. So it doesn't really matter sometimes what you do. So I think he's been put under the pump. Like if he came into the side last year, I think we would be saying completely differently, talking differently about Mennie. I don't think he's quite right. for the Australian team just yet. So who do you pick? I think Jackson Bird is certainly one that you could potentially pick.
I mean, how big is Bollinger's beard? Well, I'd love to see that big ginger beard steaming in under with a baggy green. I mean,
You have to shave it off for Adelaide, even if it's not the middle of summer.
No, he would not. No way. But I think, you know what? Sometimes we talk about a bit of mongrel and you want that in the side. I think Doug Bollinger would certainly give you that because he would bust a gut and run in 100% throughout the whole test.
Yeah, any other contenders for that third seamer spot? Happy with those guys?
Well, Lisa touched on this, I think. But Menes, you know, you've got. I feel for Joe Meny as well because he's been ostracised a bit, and I feel for Callum Ferguson as well because he perhaps might lose his spot. And I'm going back to your man management. Pat Howard, Rod Marshall, the selection panel. It is about man management. It's a sporting team, and these guys, you know, you talk about Khawaja there, that doesn't get it. This isn't how you deal with people. This isn't how you treat people. I don't know if respect's the right word, but in terms of curating their confidence, if Meny goes and he gets one test and Ferguson goes and gets, it's just not
curating
a great team
their
culture.
Confidence. Curating their confidence. I like that. I think there was a fracturing between the messages from Rod Marsh and the selectors and the players. That's kind of filtered through the levels. So I think that's thrown the whole thing out of whack. Hopefully we get some clearer messages now. Another player under the spotlight. Last one, Peter Neville. I think he gets the rest of the summer, but there is a call for someone like Matty Wade, who's a mongrel. You talk about mongrel. Matty Wade's got mongrel. He loves a scrap. You can see he'll put a bit of that Victorian culture into the Australian dressing room, which is, you know, nasty and adds a bit of an edge to it. So maybe that's what the Australian needs. You a Wade fan, anyone?
Oh, I think Peter Neville is a better gloveman. I think he leads
by that.
But does
he have the character? Can he bring this side along? Is he loud enough?
Well, that's the question. You don't need to be a loud keeper. Yet we've been brought up with loud keepers because of stump mic. We can hear them chatting away and having a dig. But you don't necessarily need that. They can lead in other ways. But Neville needs to certainly lift his game with the bat. We need our keeper to be scoring some key runs. Brad Haddin's done it, Gilchrist has done it, and you look at around the world, the keepers provide that stability right in the middle with the tail.
And that balance.
Wade's got two test centuries under his belt, so he's got some success at test level.
Well, Brad Haddin's actually, when he had his 11, he had selected Wade as a batter.
But I think that was a cop-out from Haddin because Neville's his mate and he didn't want to rub Neville out, so he's put Wade as a batsman. I don't think that'll
but
ever happen.
But you think Neville is a fantastic gloveman, but, you know, he's never made... He missed a catch in Hobart, I think it was, or a stumping, and that was always his strength. And when he started to lose that, and that was early on in the day. It wasn't like he'd been in the field for 5 or 6 hours. It just, I don't know if that's confidence or you don't normally expect that from him. You know, he's normally faultless.
Yeah, no, there was a missed stumping, absolutely. But if you were to look at the last time Matthew Wade kept in Test cricket, I think he missed a few more. So absolutely there's going to be the spotlight on the keepers because they're supposed to take and glove and affect all the stumping chances straight away. And if they don't, then everyone goes, well, hang on, they're not good enough. So I think he should be given at least to the end of this series, Neville. And then remember, the Australian team has got an ODI series against New Zealand as well in early December before we get into the Pakistan series.
Well, we've just run our rule through the Australian side. It'll be interesting to see what the selectors do for the Adelaide day-night test starting next week.
Menes, can I just throw up a curly one, mate?
Yeah.
Jake Lehman. Obviously, I mean, he averages almost 50 in first-class cricket. Is he a chance? I mean, obviously, his father's on the selection panel. His father's a coach. But, Lisa, I mean, is that a dangerous dynamic, or do you think he is good enough to get there?
Oh, no, I think he's had a really good county season for Yorkshire and then has obviously come back here and continued his performances. I think we heard Darren Lehman in a press conference say that he's out of the conversation as soon as anything's discussed by Jake. So if they do decide to select him, then that poses certainly an interesting question for Darren Lehman. I think he said if he was playing his first test, he'd go to the pub and have a few drinks because he'd be too nervous. So, like, we'll just have to wait and see
hey,
from
Dad,
a Shield
can I
point
go to
of
the
view.
Bar after play today? We'll see. We'll watch that one closely. Let's move on now to something much more up vibe and less depressing and talk about the eagerly anticipated WBBL and BBL. Now, Lisa, you're fronting up again for the Sixers this year. How are your preparations coming for the WBBL?
Yeah, they're coming. They're going. I'm winding myself up and trying to get this old body moving. So I actually did a sprint session this morning. I played one game of club cricket and look to play a couple more before we start, but really excited and can't wait till as a group we get together, which is end of November, and then we start our campaign on the 11th of December.
Now, have we seen, after such a successful tournament last year, an influx of players from around the world wanting to jump on the WBBL train?
Absolutely. The fact that we've got a few Indians that will be part of the WBBL this year. We didn't have any last year. I know the franchises certainly have had more time to kind of put their list together, whereas last year it was kind of, well, who do you know? This is our Australian players, and out of the Australian players, who do you know that we can contact, or who do you think will be good enough? Whereas I'm sure all of the franchises would have been watching the World T20 over in India and seeing the performances and from the other nations and potentially who they could pick. So I think what that will mean is that teams are going to be a lot stronger. Their preparation is going to be better, and hopefully that will transform into better performances on the field as well.
I guess there is a role now for scouts in T20 cricket. I mean, in baseball, it's a common thing.
Are you putting your finger up there, mate? Your hand up, I mean?
Yeah, anything, actually. I'm just chucking my resume on.
Australian selector?
My resume is on Craigslist. There must be a role for someone now to go off to these T20 comps and identify talent that would suit, you know, your team and your comp. It's something that's probably new to the women's game.
It certainly is. I know that I spoke to our coach on what I saw over in the World T20, so I was lucky enough to commentate so I could see the other nations and who kind of jumped out. But yeah, we've also got to think of female players in domestic competitions that haven't yet made their national team. Are we missing some dynamic players there that could fit in really well within a big bash type of setup? So it's going to be interesting to see how it moves forward. We've got associate rookies coming in as well for the second time this year. So girls that are from associate countries like Ireland, Papua New Guinea, Scotland. So they'll come in and spend 2 weeks with each WBBL team. And you never know, there could be a player there that gets an opportunity to play.
What about the West Indies players that won the Women's World T20, beat Australia in the final? Any of those players coming across?
Yeah, Stefani Taylor is back with the Sydney Thunder. Hayley Matthews has re-signed with the Hobart Hurricanes. Deandra Dotton, who was with the Perth Scorchers last year, comes into the Brisbane Heat. So they're the three that I know of. Not Great. All teams have released their full contract list, so there might be a few others popping up.
And what are the challenges for the WBBL this summer? Obviously, it's almost like second album pressure now. What are the challenges for the competition? You know, you're on both sides of it. You're a player and a commentator, so you're privy to really the whole dynamic. What's the plan for the summer?
Well, I think you're right. The second year blues is what we talk about as a player. You know, a young player comes in and everyone goes, wow, look at that player. Then the second season, they've got to back up their performances, and because people tend to know exactly what they're expecting. So the same type of thing from a WBBL point of view. I know Channel 10 is putting a lot of work behind the scenes to make sure that not only is the coverage the same, but we take it up a notch. I think you'll see that in the double headers that start on the 10th and the 11th of December at North Sydney Oval. So there's more games that are televised. I know from a team point of view, franchise point of view, there was a lot of talk about the fact that the fielding wasn't as sharp as it could be. You've got to remember that this was the first time a lot of the girls were on television. You know, the Australian players are certainly used to having cameras around and being interviewed and cameras in the change room. That's something that doesn't happen in the men's game, but it happens in the women's game. So certainly Channel 10 are trying to shoot the game a little bit differently, because it is a different game than the men's game. So I think players will start to get a better idea, and hopefully the coverage will just show you an insight into the game from a different angle.
I get the impression that the growth of the WBBL will mirror that of the BBL. Obviously, the BBL exploded dramatically, I guess, finally last year, but the ratings that you guys had on Channel 10 last year were just absolutely incredible, weren't they? They put the, you know, blew the A-League away. And I get the impression the interest is there this year, stronger interest. I think you're indicating it'll be a stronger standard of play as well.
Yeah, the main focus for us as players and also from a broadcaster is the numbers were great the first year. Now, a lot of people might have just been channel surfing and go, oh, hang on, let me just stop and have a look. Now, it's our job to make sure that we get those viewers back on board and then increase again. And I think we will. I think you'll see the standard of play will be better, which will certainly help, but also the coverage and the audience will start to get to know the players a little bit. You know, I think of when I was younger, I followed a team because I really liked one or two players within the side. So hopefully they'll start to not only know Elise Perry and Meg Lanning and Elisa Healy, they'll get to know a few other players that are quirky and have got a different insight and a different view and a different way of playing the game as well.
Now, I said in the introduction that you were appointed as an independent board member of the Federation of International Cricketers Associations. So for listeners, that's all the players associations like the ACA that we have in Australia, all of those boards coming together on one association. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And what is your role there? Are you an advisor or?
Yeah, so I'm on the board now, so I've got voting rights. Last year, FICA had a meeting and they decided and they voted on bringing women under their umbrella simply because the national players associations, a lot of them were opening up their membership to the female players. So obviously it makes sense that the international needs to do exactly the same. So I guess my role is to kind of be that gap between the board members and the players and help provide information to the board members about women's issues. But also I think, as was kind of highlighted in the meeting, just a different way of thinking about men's issues as well, just throwing out questions of, well, why don't you try this or why don't you try that? So I think we've seen how well boards work when you've got both the sexes on the board and working together to kind of take you to the one goal.
Are there any issues on the Federation that directly affect Australian cricket at the moment?
Absolutely. I think we've touched on the fact that it's scheduling and providing context to a lot of the competitions that are being played, the bilateral series.
That's a bit hard because you've got the ICC pushing back against the Federation and seemingly stopping any progress. That's the way I see it.
Sorry, what do you mean by
whenever the players want to make a change or add more context to cricket and propose these radical changes, the ICC goes, yeah, that's a good idea. And then when the vote comes, they're going, actually, nah.
Yeah, I think the relationship between ICC and FICA is certainly a lot stronger than it was. Not only from a national board point of view, but also from an ICC. We want players to be part of it. They're the reason why we've all got jobs, really, from a player's point of view. So they're the ones out in the coal face, so to speak. So let's hear them and let's have current players or player representatives on the like ICC committee, conditions committee and things like that, so that the players' views are heard. That's certainly one point of view, and sometimes players get stuck in the fact that we don't like change as well. So sometimes we need a bit of a push and a shove from an administration point of view as well. So I think everyone's trying to go in the one direction, but we've all kind of got to join together. And I think FICA is certainly trying to do that.
So it's a unifying force.
As a fan, you know, as looking at it from a fan, and you look at the bilateral series we just had in South Africa, which for the average fan, for all intents and purposes, was relatively meaningless. What are the push behind those series? How do these series come about? Obviously, they're the monetary factors. Is that the main thing that pushing it?
Well, you've got your Futures Tour program, which kind of highlights who you need to play, when you need to play them by. Obviously, when there was a change in structure a few years ago, they call it the Big Three took over. That Futures Tour program changed. So then all of a sudden, Cricket Australia could speak to South Africa and go, well, hang on, we want to play you every year. How do we do that? And so that's why tours are kind of brought in. You know, we heard Faf du Plessis saying they made a big mistake by sending the wrong side there. And everyone over there was saying, oh, South Africa have won, what a great thing it is. And it was, they played well. But the Australian supporters were like, well, hang on, it's a different side. Let's just wait and see. Well, we've seen what confidence can do. And when you're not confident, also what it can do. So I think we've got to ensure that every time we play as a country, we put our best team on the park to win games of cricket because it becomes a habit learning how to win games of cricket. And at the moment, we've lost that habit.
Yeah, it's been a while since Australia actually won a game of cricket. I think it was against Ireland at the beginning of that tour. But with your question about scheduling Macca, it seems very Machiavellian to me that like this New Zealand Chapel Hadley trophy seems to have come about in a sort of deal to get the day-night test off the ground last year, and therefore we're playing the Chapel Hadley in the middle of our summer. So it's sort of a lot of interconnecting parts. All very interesting, though, what's happening on the Federation of International Cricketers Associations. Before we move on, let me just go through the Have a Go, Your Mug promotion for the Australian Cricket Podcast. Leave a review for the show on iTunes or whatever app you listen to the show on. Then email me at auscricketpod, auscricketpod @gmail.com, and you will go in the draw for a Have a Go, Your Mug mug. If that is too complicated, just sign up on the Patreon site and subscribe to the Australian Cricket Podcast for $5 a month and you will get a mug straight away. Thank you in the last week for all the lovely messages and reviews. This week we had two reviews on iTunes. We had one from J.M. Hurwitz from Boston, Massachusetts. He's an English fan but enjoys the podcast. And we also had a review from Super Stooge One, a.k.a. Simon from Australia. Now, I've got the little cup here with the two reviews. I'm going to ask Lisa to pull a name out and read it out.
And the winner is Super Stooge.
There we go, Simon. You've won. And Have a Go, Your Mug Mug. And don't worry, JM, when I get to Boston to watch a Red Sox game, I'll give you one in person. Now, if you want to get in touch with the Australian Cricket Podcast on Gmail, auscricketpod, auscricketpod @gmail.com. We're also on Twitter @auscricketpod. We're on Facebook as the Australian Cricket Podcast. Subscribe to the show on iTunes or whatever podcast app you like to listen to podcasts on, and tell all your cricket-loving mates about the Australian Cricket Podcast.
Well, it's full and it's given. There you go, the last ball of Lisa Stelaeker's spell. She's got two wickets in this over. And she is one happy sixer girl at the moment. She keeps saying they're going vertical, but the way she keeps bowling, they might just get through this semi-final as well.
Welcome back to the Australian Cricket Podcast. That was Lisa in action in the WBBL semi-final last year. Massive appeal to get that LBW, Lisa. Excellent appealing.
I was just so excited that I got it down the wicket without bouncing twice.
Come on. Bowled sixes into the final in that game, if I remember correctly. Now, last month, there was some really exciting news in women's cricket. And Lisa, this is something I think that you can give an amazing insight into because you've been there around New South Wales cricket for such a long time. Last month, it was announced that the New South Wales Breakers will be the first full-time Australian professional women's sporting team. They will be earning a minimum wage of at least $35,000 a year, paving the way for these players to turn professional. Now, I contrast that with the quote I found from the 98 World Cup, where an Australian player said that they told us on the 98 World Cup that we'd get a bill for the tour, and we're all like, you win a World Cup and you've got to pay for it. So I'm pretty sure you've played in the former system and you've seen the transformation. What does this mean for the female players in New South Wales?
Well, it means a lot. And you're speaking to the players within the squad. They're so thankful about this opportunity to just focus on their cricket. Now, the average age for a lot of these girls are 18, 19, so they think 35,000 is a lot. As you get a bit older, 35,000 doesn't really get you much. So for those players, it means a lot. So they don't have to juggle uni plus part-time work and then trying to fit in training. They can really focus on their training, and you'll start to see, I think the New South Wales Breakers, they're going to debut three teenagers for tomorrow's match against Victoria. So some of those players are already reaping the rewards of being able to train full-time.
Now, the New South Wales are a really dominant stateside. Now that they're the only professional women's cricket team in the comp at the moment, surely they must be unbeatable.
Well, they are beatable. Queensland beat them already in the Women's National Cricket League so far. But what it will do
is going to make them stronger.
It is going to make them stronger. And Cricket New South Wales, and credit to them, have always led the way when they've looked after the female players. They were the first to kind of bring them under their umbrella back in 98 before integration really occurred, and they were the first to play payers as well. I was part of that in 2005. So they seem to be kind of leading the way, and then everyone follows. So hopefully this will allow the players a chance to train a bit more, and we may not see the results this year. I think the New South Wales Breakers are a really young side. Yes, they've got their experienced campaigners, but they've got some really young, exciting players that will develop over the next couple of years. And then we should see another era of, hopefully, Cricket New South Wales dominating again.
Now, let's end this show with the commentator critique. It's a little bit of a newsy one this week. So there seems to be more and more cricket coverage coming all the time. All the WBBL games will be streamed live on cricket.com.au. So that's to go with the Shield games, the BBL, and the multiple radio stations covering cricket at the moment. It's very exciting. Now, Lisa, I want to ask you a question. Have you played Mic'd Up?
I have.
Now, it's interesting for a viewer because I've often seen that and thinking, you know, what is it like to be trying to concentrate on a game but have someone talking in your ear at the same time?
Well, the first time I got mic'd up was with Channel 9 and I was bowling an over. And so they came to me at the start of my over. And what they forgot to do, the producer forgot to do, was click it off. So as I was running in, I could hear the commentators talking about the type of ball that I was going to bowl. But it was fine. I think I decided, and I was talking to Mark Taylor and I said, oh, let's make this interesting. I'll just toss this one up and either I'll get hit for six or hopefully pick up a wicket. It's a bit of fun. Certain players like it, other players don't.
What are the captains like? Because if I was a captain, I'd be a bit, I don't know if I want my players mic'd up during an important game.
I think Alex Blackwell has, when she was the captain of Sydney Thunder, and maybe the Breakers as well, said that I didn't want anyone mic'd up because we're there to focus. But it's all about entertaining the crowd and letting the viewers into an insight that you can give whilst you're out there on the field. So I remember for the Big Bash, I was mic'd up and I was, I think, at mid-wicket and our fast bowler, Marizana Kapp, was coming in and she goes, I keep hearing you talk as I'm running in. I'm like, sorry, I'll whisper next time. So it can be distracting for everyone else and they thought I was an idiot because I was just walking around talking and they're thinking this crazy person is just...
talking to herself.
Yeah, this old player is just talking to herself.
The veteran's at it again.
Yeah, so it can be quite different, but I think from a viewer's point of view, and Manners, maybe you can say, I think they've enjoyed it. You may not like it, but I think the general punter enjoys it.
I have enjoyed bits of it. So there was a couple of instances where Shane Warne was doing it.
He could
have been mic'd up his whole career. I think it would have just, he would have loved
on
it.
On and off the field, yeah.
So I don't think we would have wanted to hear the off the field.
But I think as the BBL and T20 comps have become more serious, and if we want to view it as the third form of the game, not below a real genuine form of cricket, you know, when a player's in a semi-final of a competition, you know, if they're talking and they drop a catch or, you know, they're not quite concentrating, I don't know if I was a captain or I was running the team, or a coach, I'd be that happy about it. So,
well, I'll ask you the question, why has the Big Bash been so successful?
Well, I think innovation's part of it, but I think as things develop, then I think when the Big Bash started, it was a bit of a Mickey Mouse view and a bit of fun, and now it's gone beyond that. So I think while innovation's important, I think maybe it's—I don't know—I can see why some captains are uncomfortable with it.
But
though.
I'm going to channel Paul here, and you know they're in the ratings game, aren't they, Menners? And I think, you know, and you've got fans coming to T20 that obviously aren't rusted on cricket fans, but I think as a broadcaster of all, you're constantly looking for something new every. Look what Channel 9's brought in this summer with the pitch scan and their Microsoft...
Pitch scan.
Yeah. But mate, you've got to have it, mate. I think you've got... It adds another dimension and adds another level of interest to the game for me.
Now, also you were talking about...
Oh, he wants to move on. He's done, yeah.
What can I say?
Last week when I disagreed with you, moved on as
I
well.
Do a podcast, so I'd be happy to it if I was playing. I'd be talking the whole thing. Well, I used to sledge a lot, so I don't know how long I'd stay mic'd up for. Now you talked about the Big Bash. I saw all the commentators get together for the Big Bash with the photo. Any talk about this segment? Like any Howie, Andy Marr, just so they know the Australian Cricket Podcast is listening and watching?
I'm sure they do.
Good.
They're on notice, mate.
They're on notice. What you were saying, any changes for the Big Bash in the commentary? Any, you know, big, you know, do they have a pitch scan coming or, you know, an enjoyment indicator or something?
I think it's pretty much the same. Obviously, we've got the Big Bash. You've got a few different commentators coming on board. It was announced. Now his name escapes me. New Zealand opening batter.
Oh, Brendan McCullum.
Thank you. Yeah. had a mental blank.
He's playing and commentating.
Yeah. You've also got Darren Lehman coming in for a couple.
Yep.
Andrew.
A couple of beers, no doubt.
Andrew Simons as well.
We like that.
I think. I think Channel 10 are very smart and strategic in how they kind of bring other commentators in. Obviously, you've got your main stayers that have done really well to take the Big Bash to another level.
I was happy they turfed Flintoff this year.
I was going to say they've been strategic and smart if they've got rid of him.
Yeah, Flintoff, he polarizes people, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Well, I just think one season was enough.
One match was enough. So we talk about commentating in this segment a lot, and how is your commentating developed, Lisa? Like, how are you finding it go? You know, broadcasting is something you get more experience, you get more comfortable with. How are you finding that?
I was going to say, maybe you guys could give me a bit of feedback.
Well,
That's next week. Hang on, I'm starting to sweat now.
I haven't really, you haven't made it into the critique segment yet.
Okay.
You're one of our guests, I don't know.
No, I'm happy to listen to feedback.
But I'm serious. Like, how is your relationship developing to that art?
Yeah, look, it's certainly a lot harder than everyone thinks it is. Firstly, you try not to say the same things again and again and again for a long period of time. Otherwise, when you do your highlights clips, it just has you going shot, 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 you know, or something like that. So you've got to say different ways.
Michael Clark likes huge. Everything's huge when Michael Clark's commentating.
Oh, I think everyone has little crutch words or phrases that they go back to. It's all about, I look at it as when I started playing cricket, I was pretty rubbish playing cricket. So I'm sure when I first got behind the mic, I wasn't that great as well. But I certainly felt a lot more comfortable. The more opportunities you get, more training, more practice that you do, you're going to feel more comfortable. So at the moment, I've got a good group of people around me that give me feedback straight away. I also listen back and any interviews or anything, I try and record and then try and hear it back. And am I saying the same word again? Am I going up and down with my voice? Am I posing some interesting conversations as well? So not only do you have to do your research and know what's going on in world cricket, but you have to know intimately the players and a bit of background. And I think what people like about the Women's Big Bash as well is that we delve a little bit more into who the person is. So it's not just about what's going on the field there. It's Alex Blackwell is a genetic counsellor. Little things like that which add to who the person is out there.
I noticed last summer that the commentary in the WBBL seemed to get more comfortable as the season went on, and you sort of saw more characters coming out. And I noticed you liked a little bit of banter, obviously, with your co-commentator. But that certainly comes out. I also think there's a rhythm to commentating that gets underestimated. And people talk about that when they talk about the test, that they're talking too much. I think sometimes you want to just feel you're sitting with some interesting people watching the cricket, not being spoken to all the time. And I thought that came across last year a bit. You know, who is it? You and
Mel Jones
had a bit of a banter going on for a while there. And sort of you just feel like you're sitting next to two interesting people.
Yeah, I think timing is really the key. So, and you, like you said, rhythm. So when things happen, when the cricket is exciting, you talk about the cricket. And when things are a little bit lull, that's where you add a bit. And I think if you've got with your co-commentators a really comfortable relationship, and I'm very fortunate enough to kind of do a lot of work with Mel Jones, and you know she's really been commentating since the early 2000s, so she's well established herself. So it's good to kind of bounce things off her, and she certainly helped me and developed me as a commentator. But the more that you commentate with certain people, and now I've done a couple of IPLs with Danny Morrison and Pommy Mbangwa, and you get a feel for how they do things. And I think what really adds to it is a bit of banter. You know, you can play off each other as long as you get back to the cricket and it's not just solely about you guys and your little inside jokes. If you're able to kind of share that with everyone else, then
I think personality as well, like bringing your character to what you're saying and delivering. And it's important to just sort of, I think, make people feel a bit comfortable, like they're really hearing that person. It's not an act the whole time.
Yeah, I think that's the key. When you first come in as a commentator, you almost want to sound like someone, but you don't know what your sound is, so you start to try and figure it out. So you would have seen me during the WBBL be very serious at the start because it was like, you know, this is the big time, you know, I've got to get it right. And then slowly I got more comfortable and my personality and cheekiness came out, which hopefully you'll see right from the start.
Well, it's like finding your own voice. I think you have to sort of be comfortable with the way you want to sound. And yeah, so looking forward to the WBBL coverage this summer. We'll be watching, no doubt.
Yeah, I look forward to the feedback.
Well, look, there won't be any criticism. Feedback. When we had Gus Warland on, he was very nervous about what criticism, because Gus is going to be commentating the tests and he was nervous about what might come his way. But don't worry, if you've been on this show, you get a bit of a pass. Well, guys, I think we've run out of time. We've clicked over. Thanks so much for coming in for the Australian Cricket Podcast, Lisa. It was amazing to have you. We learned so much in that hour. It was great.
Yeah, thanks for coming on the show, Lisa. Menace, thanks for having me.
We'll be back next week with the show on Monday because I'm off to Adelaide next week for the test match. So listeners, back-to-back shows, one and then one early next week. We'll preview the Adelaide test and look at the side. And I guess, Lisa, last question. The Australian Southern Stars are playing the South African women's team tomorrow. Will an Australian team beat a South African team, do you think, at some stage?
Well, the Southern Stars are favourites. They're the first team to qualify for the Women's World Cup next year in July. South Africa is still yet to qualify. Based on their performances, the Southern Stars should win, but we all know cricket's a funny game.
Well, listeners, on that note...
One last question for you. How are you feeling about that trip to Adelaide? Because if we lose over in Adelaide, it's the first ever time we've suffered a whitewash on home soil.
How am I feeling, James? As I said, it's an emotional week. It's lucky Lisa's here because this podcast...
There might have been tears amongst
could have
men.
Gone off the rails. I don't know. I'm glad that there's been a line in the sand and we'll see an exciting game. I'm there for 4 days, so I'm really hopeful we're going to get 4 days of cricket. And yeah, we'll be back on Monday with another Australian Cricket Podcast. Thanks, Macca. Thanks, Lisa.
Thanks, bye. Bye.
What a marvellous stroke. He's played no better shot than that in the whole of the series.